Welcome to Wealthability, where we're always discovering how to make way more money while paying way less taxes. Hi, this is Tom Wheelwright, your host, founder, and CEO of Wealthability. You know, when you invest and you take control of your wealth and control of your taxes, you're going to develop some true wealth. You're going to have something to leave to your spouse, your children, your grandchildren, your charities. That success brings with it complexity. And it becomes even more complex when you're not around anymore to deal with it. When you pass away, your loved ones will be grieving. It will be a difficult time for them. The last thing we want is for it to be difficult to deal with your financial affairs. What if you could make the financial aspect of passing away a relief instead of a worry? Today, you're going to learn how to set up your financial affairs so they are clean, easy, and stress-free for those you leave behind. Now, obviously, none of us know when we're going to die. So if we did, right, the old saying that if I knew where I was going to die, I wouldn't go there. We don't know when we're going to die. We don't know where we're going to die. We don't know the circumstances of it. What we do know is that it's going to happen at some point. So the sooner we prepare for it, the better off we're going to be. And we don't have to worry so much about it. I've had multiple experiences with clients whose spouses have passed away. My own mother and father passed away several years ago. And I watch how different people deal with that experience and whether they deal with it before they pass away or whether they let their children and successors deal with it. And I will tell you, I've seen some wonderful, wonderful things happen, and I've seen some absolutely tragedies occur. Let me give you an example of one of the wonderful things. Now, my parents died of old age, basically. My mother, long before she died, she brought us all together and she said, here are the documents your father and I have prepared for when we pass away. And this was when they weren't planning to pass away anytime soon, right? They were not old at the time. They wanted us to understand what the plan was. And they said, look, if you have things around the house that are meaningful to you, put your name on the back or on the bottom and choose now, okay? And then if there are any conflicts, we'll deal with that now. So there are some paintings that my brother wanted. There was an old French book that I wanted. There was a painting I wanted. There's a piano. These are little things. They're not hugely valuable, except to those who have them. So that was very comfortable, and they set up all the documentation so that everything was done appropriately, and it made dealing with it very easy. Another client, that she was nurse, her husband was a physician, and he was several years older than her, and he'd set up everything right. When she died, she and I sat down with the attorney, and the attorney said, you know what, it's all set up. There's nothing you need to do. You're good to go. And what a relief, because the doctor's passing was very sad, of course, and he was a great man. And it became such a relief that she was taken care of financially. More than that, everything was set up properly so that she didn't have to worry about it. Remember, you've got a lot of moving parts. I mean, you may have, you know, when you look at what you have, you may have, right, a company over here that is a business. You may have over here, you might have real estate. You might have trusts for your kids. You have all sorts of things going on as you're successful building wealth while you've been reducing your taxes. So we want to make sure that when you're gone, you're not the only one who knows about this, and we want to make sure that it's really easy to be administered, okay? That there are people in place to help you, and that we don't have predators coming out of the woodwork, people preying on your spouse, your children. We have We don't have the politicians praying you through big taxes. We want to make sure that this is set up properly. Let me give you the other side. So I've told you a couple of good stories. So I had a client, and he was very healthy. He wasn't very old. He was maybe 70, 71, but in very good health. And we'd set things up, but he hadn't quite completed. He was a hunter, and he went out hunting one day, and he died of a heart attack on the hunt. Very peaceful. It was, you know, he just expired. Well, because he hadn't done everything right, he had a girlfriend that had been his girlfriend for 20 years, and he had children from previous marriages. Big legal battle ensued. It took years to resolve. So we don't want those things to happen, right? It's stressful enough to handle the funeral. Let's make it easy to handle your financial situation so there aren't years and years of financial stress. So here's what we're going to do to set things up. The very first thing you have to do is you need to make decisions. As I was discussing with my mother and my father, they made decisions early on. Okay, this is what's going to happen. They have had a vacation property at a lake. Said, we're just so y'all know, your oldest sister, they use the cabin all the time. So we'd like to give them the cabin. You guys can still use it once in a while, you know, just ask her for it. She set aside 2 weeks for us every year. She said, but we'd like them to have it and because they use it the most. And we were all good with that. That was great. She said, okay. So then we made decisions about who had what, right? And then they made decisions about, okay, what happens to our financial assets when we pass away. So all those decisions needed to be made long before they passed. And I will tell you that once my mother passed, and she passed 4 years before my father passed away. And once my mother passed away, my father really did not want to deal with any of that. So the fact that they'd made that decision early was a great relief to my father. And of course, it allowed him to continue living and doing what he wanted to do. And he was set up so that he could take care, he was taken care of financially. And my mother had always handled the money. My dad was not ever very good with money. And he was a great man, just not with the money. And she'd always handled it. She'd always dealt with it. So having that all set up, see, it's typically people think, well, you know, the man knows everything. Well, no, they don't. Okay, we don't know everything. We need to sit down with our loved ones. We need to make decisions. What do we want to have happen? Now, when we do make those decisions early, we can actually do some pretty great planning about it. Okay, so whether it's as simple as putting your name on the back of a painting or the bottom of a statue or, you know, on the piano, right? Whether it's that or whether it's a major decision about I'd like my assets to go to this charity, right? Or I don't want my children to have assets, or I have a special needs child that needs things set up. It doesn't matter what it is. Once we need to make these decisions early. And that's the hardest part. It's the hardest part. So we need to make decisions like who, the amount, when do they get it? All of these decisions need to be made. Now you might decide my mother, her plan in life was basically to break even at the end of their lives, right? She wanted to leave enough that my dad could be taken care of, but really they didn't plan to leave a whole lot of money to their kids, and there wasn't, right? I mean, we had the house, we had, you know, a little bit of stock portfolio, and that was it. And they'd done a really good job. They'd done a really good job of managing their money. And then they, you know, they left a little bit of money, but the rest of us, we were all grown, and it was not the end of the world. So they made those decisions. Now, there are other people that might want to decide, I want my legacy to be for a very long time. And I want it. I want my children. I want my children to be able to build a dynasty. Or others who say, I want it all going to charity. I have a friend who wants to leave enough so that charity can get $100 million a year. Now, that's a big ask. But it may be that you just want charity to get $100,000 a year, right? Whatever that number is that you'd like to get charity, and then there are some things we can do there. So we're going to talk about what, you know, we're going to talk about how to do this. But first thing we have to do is we have to make the decisions. Number two is we need to set this up with flexibility. Again, we don't know when we're going to pass away. We don't know when we're going to die. So even let's say we're in our 70s. We could live to 120. We don't know what medical advances are going to be made in the next few years. So we need to be flexible, knowing that we may die tomorrow. We may not die for another 50 or 60 years. So we need to make sure that whatever we set up includes flexibility. Along with that flexibility is control. Who do you want to have control your wealth? Most of us, as when we're alive, we want to control our wealth. We don't want somebody else to control it. We certainly don't want our children to control our wealth. So that's always the biggest question is, okay, what do I do? What do I do, Tom, if I want to have the tax benefits and I want to make sure things are certain for when I die, I just don't want anybody else to control it while I'm alive. And I want to be able to benefit from it financially while I'm alive. I want to spend as much as I want during my life. See, that's all flexibility. So that flexibility is key. And the third thing we want to do is we want to make sure we have clarity. So it's very clear to our survivors what it is we're doing. I've seen some really good planning, particularly estate tax planning, that it was so convoluted that I've read a lot of trusts. I've read a lot of documents over my lifetime. I had a really hard time understanding. I had to spend hours with an attorney, and multiple times having him explain it to me, because it's so convoluted. So I don't think you have to be that convoluted. I think you can make it very simple. Now, one of the things we do with our clients is we draw very simple diagrams, right? So we want to make sure that, for example, you know, you have multiple businesses. Maybe that you've got it set up so that you've got one holding company, right? You may have five businesses down here and you have one holding company, and that may be a taxed as a corporation. But see, that makes it, clarity is, this is what I own right here, right? This business owns all of these. It's really clear because we see a picture of it. So part of the preparation is making sure that it's really well documented, but also that there's a good diagram of what's going on. So that structure diagram that we've talked about in other courses, that needs to be constantly updated, and share it with those you need to share it with. If you have adult children and you have a good relationship with them with money and doesn't cause issues, share it with them. I encourage you to share it with your team members. Make sure that your attorney has it and your accountant, and maybe your banker even needs to have it, because your banker may be an eventual trustee. So we need to make it really, really clear. All right, so how do we do this? Well, there are certain documents we need. These documents are going to tell everybody what's going on, and they will actually have legal consequence to them. So we want to make sure we have the documents set up. The very first document we need is a will. And don't tell me, I've got trusts, I've got all this other stuff. You still need a will. Here's what a will does. There are three primary aspects to a will. The first is guardians for minor children. Who's going to be the guardian of your minor children? So that is critical, and you will, because otherwise, you know, you may not want Uncle Roscoe to be, you know, the guardian of your children. You might not want your in-laws to be the guardians of your grandchildren. So have this discussion with your children when they have children. All right? This is a big deal. My wife and I have been dealing with this one recently. Next, you need to list in your will who's the executor. Now, the executor of your estate. So an estate is simply all of the assets when you die, that you have when you die. So everybody has an estate because everybody has assets. They at least have a checking account, right? So everybody's got an estate technically when they die. So who's going to be in charge of dealing with the financial aspects of your estate? That's the executor. So it could be one of your children. It could be a sibling, could be a close friend. They have to be, you need more than one though, because you need to list who's the executor if the first one you name declines. What if your oldest child, which is a typical executor decision, says, I don't want to do this? Well, the court will not force them to do it. And so then who's it go to? Well, we need to list, okay? So if not your oldest child, who then is, who then is that subsequent executor, or do you let them choose, right? So we need to list the executor. The other thing we need to list is we need to list inheritance. Now, I'm going to go through trusts and how to use trust. I don't know if that's spelled right, but anyway. Even if we have trust set up, we need to put into our will, for anything that's not in my trust, this is what happens to it. So let me take you back to my friend who died hunting. His trusts were not set up properly. Well, he thought they were. The plan was that they were all set up. So he was taking care of his girlfriend. He was taking care of his kids. He was taking care of charity. He had a major plan for charity. The charity, of course, got nothing because it all went, you know, eventually, even if the lawsuit was settled, the charity got nothing. It ended up with, you know, former kids, kids and girlfriend. I mean, you know, she did end up with something, but again, had there been a really good will, then it would have specified, okay, anything that's not in trust goes this way, all right? We also can put pour-over provisions that go the other way. So anything that's in my will that's not in trust automatically goes into my trust, right? That's called a pour-over will. So it pours over into the trust. Everything that's not in my will automatically goes in my will, or everything except for household goods and furnishings goes into my trust. So you've got complete flexibility with this. You've got complete control over this while you're alive. And we never know when we're going to die. So take care of this right away. The second document we need is we need a living trust. I know that there are a lot of attorneys now that they say, well, the laws are so good with probate, I would prefer not to do a living trust because people don't fund them anyway. Well, what if you found an attorney that actually made the funding happen? Here's the challenge I have with advisors like attorneys and accountants, etc. Financial advisors. They don't make things happen. They rely on you to make things happen. Well, if they rely on you to make things happen, let's face it, a lot of things aren't going to happen because you forget. So everything needs to be funded in this trust. Well, let's have a trusted advisor who makes sure they're funded. If you make sure they're funded and you've got a will, so you've got this pour over will, your trust will work great. Now, a living trust basically retitles your assets to the trust. It is completely flexible. You can change anything you want anytime you want while you're alive. It's not flexible when you die. And the ownership of the trust, the beneficiary of the trust, and the trust document guides whoever is handling the trust. So for a living trust, you need to have You need to know the beneficiaries, of course, because, of course, your spouse is very likely to be the primary beneficiary. Also, trustee and successor trustees, because again, somebody can choose not to be a trustee. They may not want to do it. You know, you have children or family members. They may say, I don't want to do this. I know nothing about, you know, I know nothing about this stuff. I don't want to do it. Eventually, you should probably have a corporate trustee, okay, a trust company as a default if everybody declines, right? I always think that you should always, at the bottom of the list, should be a corporate trustee. It's not your ideal, because they're going to be very conservative. They're not going to do it. You know, they're going to follow the trust documents. They're going to be extraordinarily conservative about it. I don't think it's ideal. They don't know your family. You need to have one anyway, because otherwise, you're again, you're just causing confusion and problems for your family. They decide they don't want to be trustee. Those are the key. And then, you know, you really have, it's all operation, really operations. You're really setting out what's going to happen with the assets. How are they going to be invested? How can I substitute assets, right? If I've got a business and that business is being split three ways with my three children, and one of my children is involved in the business and the other two are not, can we substitute? So in other words, could my daughter who is running the business, could she go, look, can we substitute assets in for the other kids so that they get their third share? I want the business, right? So you've got to put in things like that. Trust can be extraordinarily flexible. Again, while you're alive, you can change anything you want. Once you die, it's settled. So that's a living trust. We also need all of the, let me call them medical documents. So this might be a living will, which says, pull the plug. You know, I don't want to be artificially resuscitated. You know, I don't want to be put on artificial life support. It's going to determine, you know, who has power of attorney to make medical decisions if you're incapable of making them. So there's all sorts of medical documents you need. So your attorney who's drafting the will and the trust should help you with all of those medical documents. Right. So any of those other documents. Now, those are your basics, the will, the living trust, and your medical documents. The reality is, if you had those three, your family would be in good hands. Now, you might still have estate taxes. You might have income tax issues. You might have other things. There are more you can do from a planning standpoint. Those are the basics, will, living trust, and medical documents. You have these in place. And you have the trust funded, everything signed, everything's completed, you can rest easy. Because then, if something happens to you, your legacy goes the way you want it to. Now, there are a couple of opportunities here. One is to do what we call, and I'm going to use the acronym for it because this is how they're commonly referred to, an islet. An islet is an irrevocable life insurance trust. This is to hold, this is to own, owns life insurance, particularly whole life or, you know, permanent insurance. It owns the life insurance. Now, the benefit of this is that it's not subject to estate tax, because you don't own it anymore. That's the benefit. You may want to have your life insurance proceeds outside of your estate from an estate tax standpoint. So it's not taxed in your estate. If you own it, if you own the life insurance policy, then that $10 million when it's paid out is going to be in your estate. You want life insurance, by the way, for other reasons. Even if you don't have an islet, life insurance can be a really good help to your family, because life insurance provides liquidity. And liquidity is one of the hardest things to deal with as a survivor of an estate. Let's say your assets are real estate, and let's say you've got some precious metals, gold and silver, and you've got a business, and you've got a farm. Okay, which of the and you don't have money in the stock market. You don't have much cash on hand because you're constantly invested. So you pass away. Which of those are liquid? Well, the only one that's liquid is the precious metals. But remember, when you sell precious metals, you're going to get a lot less than what the market value is. So it's, while you can sell them, if the market's down in precious metals, you're going to be hurt. So I prefer not to use precious metals as liquidity if possible. Life insurance provides liquidity because what you have is you have a bunch of cash now. Well, let me talk just for a second about the difference between whole life and term insurance. Term insurance is where you get it only while you're paying the premium, right? In other words, if you die during a year where you've paid a premium, then the life insurance pays out. Term insurance, the statistics are, will be paid out about 1% of the time, or less than 1%. Whole life, or what we call permanent insurance, it pays out about 97% of the time. So another way to show it is term insurance is an expense, and whole life is an asset. Okay, so, you know, when you're young, you don't have any money, term insurance can make a lot of sense because you just want to protect your young family in case something happens. I mean, it's really death insurance. It's not life insurance. Whereas as you get a little older, you know, I think once you turn 40 or so, you probably ought to start looking at whole life insurance or some other way to create liquidity in your estate so that if something happens to you, then, you know, it's available to you. Challenges, you know, you can get whole life even when you're in your 60s and 70s. It's just really expensive, okay? Because, of course, it's a time value of money, right? So it provides liquidity. It's obviously safe, you know, as safe as an investment can be. Life insurance tends to not. It's pretty hard if you've paid in, you have a paid up policy to lose, you know, that life insurance companies, even when they go out of business, the government, requires, other insurance companies to take on those policies. So those whole life policies. So I suggest, and whether it's whole life or universal life or variable life, whatever you want to call it, but something that provides permanent insurance could be the way you provide liquidity in your estate. It's not the only way. You could have cash. You could have assets in the stock market. Again, if the market goes down, then you have to sell those. Then, you know, that could be challenging. But some type of liquidity. So liquidity is very important, and insurance is one way to provide that liquidity. I think that's the primary purpose. I think that's the primary benefit of insurance, is to provide liquidity in your estate. Now, the other thing it can do, of course, is it can protect you. So let's say that you want to make sure that your kids have $5 million when you die. Okay. Or you want to be able to, you've got a business that's worth $5 million. You want to make sure that your family, your partner actually isn't stuck with your family as partners, right? So you put in life insurance to buy out your interest, right? So that life insurance, what it means is that it gives you freedom to do other things with your assets while you're alive. The reality is, you could be, let's say my mother had wanted to leave something to her kids, but she didn't want to be out of, you know, she wanted to be able to spend her money and invest the way she wanted to invest. Well, she could have done that if she'd had a whole life policy, because then, let's say she did run it to zero, the kids would still have the whole life policy, would still have the life insurance. I'm talking about permanent life insurance here. I don't mean to constantly say whole life. It can be whole life, universal life, variable life. Whatever, you know, you decide with your advisors is the best type of policy for you. It's just permanent insurance. So I think insurance is a very important part of your estate planning. You may decide, I don't want insurance. Okay, you get to a point where you have cash, you want to make investments, or your children are grown and you go, doesn't matter what happens to my money. So I don't need that liquidity. So those are all things to think about. Now, the other thing we really ought to think about is we ought to think about, from a planning standpoint, we ought to look at trusts. And beyond a living trust, we ought to look at using trusts for both tax benefits and family planning, family financial planning. So, yeah, trust won't do family planning, just family financial planning. Two types of trusts we want to look at. I would say three types of trusts. One is just a typical children's trust, so trust for your children. One would be a special needs trust. And let me explain special needs. Special needs is just what it sounds like. It's for any of your heirs who might be handicapped now or in the future. See, we might say, well, my children are all healthy. We have no guarantee they will always be healthy, though. They're all competent. We don't know that they will always be competent. So a special needs trust is... It's just part of a children's trust, right? This is actually a subset of a children's trust that says, look, if my child has special needs. Now, some of us have special needs to begin with, right? I mean, we have handicapped children right now. So we'd want it set up. If they have special needs and they're going to need government assistance, then we're going to change. We're going to have some automatic provisions change so that they qualify for the government assistance. And so the purpose of these trusts is really to protect your children. That's what they're for. They're to protect your children. So they protect them from creditors. They protect them from themselves. They protect them from bad marriages. You know, they protect them from, you know, maybe even your partners. They may need protecting from your partners. So they're a very important type of protection, and I strongly recommend. I have trust for my kids. I think trusts are a really good protection, a really, really good protection. The third type of trust is a charitable trust. And I want to spend a few minutes talking about charitable trusts because there are some, I know that a lot of you, when you look at your legacy, in fact, let's draw this out. Let's say that here's your lifeline here, okay? And let's say that you have actually a good strategy. Here's where you are today. Here's your dream. And you're going to live your dream for the rest of, and this is, I'm going to call this the rest of your life, right? And then over here is your legacy. So I know a lot of you, as you think about your legacy, you're thinking about what can I leave to a charity? And you may actually want to make sure that your kids are taken care of for their lifetime, and then whatever is left over goes to a charity. Or you may want your kids to get a certain amount during their lifetime, the rest of the income to go to charity, and then when you die, that you have money that goes to, that the remainder of those assets go back to your children. Or you might want to have the income paid to you during your life from an asset, and then it goes to entirely to a charity, or partially to a charity and partially to your kids. Or it may go to a charity after your kids die. I mean, there's all sorts of ways you can do that. Are you starting to get the picture that you can be as flexible as you want to be? You just have to do it up front. So there are certain decisions, by the way, that you can change in a trust, even if it's what we call an irrevocable trust. So when we look at trusts, we have two types of trusts. We have revocable, which means we can make major changes to it. We can even get rid of the trust if we want to. That's like a living trust or a family trust. And then we have irrevocable. And an irrevocable trust, we are limited in what we can change. Right, so we might be able to substitute assets, right, cash for business. We might be able to substitute, change certain things. We likely cannot change the beneficiary. Again, this is a discussion you need to have with your estate planning attorney and your tax advisor, right? But here's what happens. If we do a charitable trust, then we get a tax deduction, and we fund that charitable trust today, we get a tax deduction today. So a charitable trust we're going to get tax savings. Think about it this way. Whatever the charity is going to get is a charitable deduction, right? Only if we give it to them now for use later, we get the deduction now, not later. The amount of the deduction is based on tables, IRS tables, and it's just present value calculation, right? So if the charity, if we're anticipated to live 30 years, then we discount whatever, and let's say the charity is, you know, scheduled to get $1 million, we discount that back 30 years using the IRS tables, and we might get a deduction for $100,000, okay, whatever it's worth today. So they're going to get it later, but we're going to get a tax deduction today. On top of that, it's not going to be included in our estate for estate tax purposes. So let's say we have high growth assets, and we decide we're going to get the income from it, but the charity is going to get the residual, what's left over. Well, we have all that high growth when we're not going to be paying tax on the growth, right? Because that's all going to the charity. And we may want to split it so that some of it goes to the charity. Let's say that the initial amount, that we have a fixed amount that goes to the charity and the remainder goes to our kids, or a fixed amount goes to our kids, the remainder goes to the charity. See, I'm just trying to help you be aware of what's possible here. I think charitable trusts, and the two most common types of charitable trusts, you would have one where you get the income now and the charity gets the remainder. That's a charitable remainder trust. Okay. Or there's one where the charity gets the money now and your kids get the remainder. Okay. That's a charitable lead trust. So we have a remainder and a lead. Pretty self-explanatory. What happens when we have these trusts is that we literally can control our legacy from the grave. So we can be 6 feet under, or our ashes spread all over, spread in the ocean, or in the mountains, wherever we want them, and yet we still control what goes on, and we literally leave a legacy. Now, here's the other thing. We talked about we want to make sure things are clear. Trusts really help make things more clear, as long as they're drafted without too much gobbledygook in them, right? But they really help from a clarity standpoint. And so we want to make sure that things happen the way we want them to, even after we die. We set up trust now. We make sure our wills are properly set up. We make sure we have our medical documents set up. When we do that, we make our passing, while challenging because our family and our friends are missing us, it's stress-free for them. As little as stress possible from a financial standpoint, and the actual, and they instead of cursing your name, they bless your name, right? They bless your name for setting this up so that they're so that they're taken care of however you want them to be taken care of, that you get it. You know, you what happens is what you wanted to have happen. Unlike my friend, it didn't happen the way he wanted it to because it was not set up properly in the beginning. And it wasn't, by the way, the attorney set everything up right, just didn't get it funded. So make sure that you dot your I's and cross your T's when it comes to your estate planning. When you do that, you leave a legacy of joy, of comfort, completely lacking stress, and not only will you have more money and less taxes during your lifetime, your family will enjoy more money and less taxes for years to come. See you next time.